into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network. The Paddy Power Half Hour on OTB Sports. Minimal contact in stadiums. That shouldn't stop the usual suspects from going down. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
I just caught a glimpse of myself on screen there for the first time. You're very welcome along to this week's edition of the Paddy Power Half Hour. And if you're wondering what's going on, well, it's Halloween, we all know that. Today we're dressing up and donating to support. The hashtag is Trick or Treat for Temple Street to raise funds for equipment for the little patients of Temple Street Hospital. We'd like you to join us. Get on to otbsports.com/donate. Enda, what have you dressed up as?
I'm dressed up as Liam Brady from 1980.
I mean, you're not. Jersey. You're just wearing a Juventus top to work and pretending to be Liam Brady.
I didn't actually have time to.
I mean, you did.
I haven't worn a Halloween costume in about 10 years, so I was contemplating wearing a black plastic bag and going as a recession kid. But
that would have been acceptable. There would have been at least a bit of effort and thought into it. Whereas you just opened your cupboard and went, "Which sports top can I take?" and then pretend to be a person on that team.
Listen, all that matters here is that people donate.
This is true. otbsports.com/donate. Okay, so with us as ever, I've already introduced him. It's Donegal's answer to insert tricky winger cliche, because he revealed last week he's actually not a centre back, who has a surprisingly good touch for a big man. So I was going to say that'd be Kevin Kilbane, but obviously his touch wasn't great. So it's more Chris Waddle, right?
Well, geez, I'll take that. I mean, if you watch back the off the ball five side last year, there's one winger setting up one other winger in that one goal in that game altogether. And a call with the assist for Kevin Kilbane is not something I ever expected to say.
I'm reliably told in the office you compared yourself to Kevin De Bruyne recently.
I never did that.
Which is almost as controversial as David Myler saying that Trent Alexander-Arnold is as good as Kevin De Bruyne. And this week's pointy-headed odds compiler from Paddy Power is Emmett O'Keefe. Emmett, who are you dressed up as?
I guess kind of a low-key football nerd is about all I can pull off at this point.
Okay. I'm here in Stato from from back in the day. All right, let me run you through the fixtures before we're going to tell you what we're going to get into. So we're here every Friday afternoon going through every single Premier League game to tell you what's happening and why. The fixture list, fairly straightforward. Wolves against Palace, Burnley against Chelsea. Wolves Palace is tonight. Burnley, Chelsea, Liverpool, West Ham. And then on Sunday, it's Aston Villa against Southampton, Newcastle against Everton, Man United against Arsenal. It's the 4:30 kickoff. We've got that live for you on Off the Ball on Sunday afternoon. And Spurs against Brighton after that, then Fulham against West Brom. And Leeds, Leicester City is the second game on Monday. I don't know why they're making it so strung out. Saturdays are not a football day anymore at all. Let's start with our Twitter poll, though. So we were asking, this is effectively the odds on who's going to win the league without betting on Liverpool and City. So we've already asked that question. That's the wrong graphic for that one. That's game week 7. That's the first game. So our Twitter poll was, who's going to finish first behind Man City and Liverpool? And did you know off the top of your head, roughly, as Manchester United or?
Man United were in the lead last time I checked. And then it was Chelsea after that, or Tottenham after that, then Chelsea, then someone else. So I'm not really sure who that someone else is.
Everton, essentially, or Villa, or Leeds. So it's you get the field, right? You can take the field on that. So, but Manchester United are not the favourites with you guys, Evan, are they?
No. So Chelsea 23-10, Spurs 5-2, United 5-1, Everton 6-1, Arsenal 7-1, and Leicester 11-1.
So, why is your market so out of kilter with what people actually think, or what our listeners think?
I think we, and I think the feeling the office would be that kind of Chelsea are a little bit undervalued at the moment. I think they would have started the season in this market kind of 5-6 evens favourites. And even though they have had somewhat of a shaky start, I feel the kind of market's probably maybe gone a little bit too far against them. I even think they're possibly even worth chancing to win the Premier League at 14-1. I think we're starting to see Ben Chilwell being a really creative outlet at left back. Zajac and Pulisic come back from injury. And like, and I think just that, that like even Kai Havertz played quite well during the week and playing closer to goal. Then Edouard Mendy has to be an improvement on Kepa last year. So there are a lot of factors which would say I would think that Chelsea will get close to 80-ish points in the Premier League this year, which I think in a normal year obviously wouldn't be enough to win it. But this, I think this is a different type of season. I think if they get to 80-ish points, I think that could be enough to go close to the Premier League.
Okay.
And I think the only barrier to that obviously I think would possibly be Frank Lampard.
Well, it's okay. You've got to bake that in. But Manchester United, we'll come to this, I think, with Man United. But one of the points Solskjaer made very early on in the season was that they hadn't had a full pre-season. He gave a really interesting 10-minute interview to Norwegian TV before the game the other night. And he said, OK, we're fully fit, start judging us now. And then his team went out and annihilated last season's Champions League semi-finalists and the team who are currently top of the Bundesliga. So I think that... you know, you can certainly take him at his word. John Giles was having none of it last night, by the way. You should check that out. He thinks that essentially Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was throwing mud at the wall and seeing what sticked. But so every week at the start of the show, we pick a couple of quick bets that we want to talk about because we're specifically interested in them. Andy, you've picked record number of hat-tricks scored this year. Brighton have over 10 shots on goal and a draw in more than five games across the weekend. What's going on?
Yeah, so the reasoning behind that is because we are on course to have a record number of hat-tricks in the Premier League. I think the record was set in the 90s, there, very early 90s, the beginning of the Premier League, and it hasn't really been broken since. But we're on if it continues the way that we've started, then we will have around about 39 hat-tricks in the Premier League this year, which is probably unlikely, to be fair. It's probably going to slow down. But Patrick Bamford's hat-trick is what kind of spurred this on because it was one of the best hat-tricks of the year, if not the last couple of years in the Premier League. And then Brighton again, I've spoken about this. Brighton have so many shots, but none of them are really threatening. So I do think they're a good chance to have over 10 shots on target against Tottenham this weekend. But I would say about maybe one of them might actually threaten Lloris in goals. And then the final one, what was the final one again, Joe?
Draw in more than five games across the weekend.
Again, we ran through this last week as well. We're continuing on a thread where the average of amount of games without draws has to go down. So we have to see more draws coming off for it to balance out in the average of the last couple of seasons. So I do think there's going to be a number of draws this weekend again.
OK. Emmett, explain to Ender why he's mad for all three of these.
Yeah, so the Brighton one's probably the most ambitious. So we're currently going on 200-1 on Brighton to have 11 plus shots on target. I think as Enda alluded to, Brighton do have a high number of shots, just quite without the finishing. So, but if you fancy that, we're certainly giving you a fairly amenable price there. The hat-tricks one's pretty interesting, I think too. I think the record number was 19, and we've already seen six so far this season. We've gone as short as 8-11 on the hat of the record of hat-tricks you've broken this season. Yeah, so as in like six hat-tricks is just so many so early in the season, coming one every 10 matches, when the record of 19 was one every 20 matches, that it gives a significant chance of breaking the record, even if we do see some regression. So I think that certainly is a reasonable chance. And then in terms of the draws, we're going 14-1 on five draws out of 10 matches there. So I think, yeah, certainly a decent price if that's something you fancy this weekend.
Okay. And are you tempted by any of those?
I'm tempted by the hat-tricks because, I mean, everyone loves a hat-trick.
So. Odds on, and you've got to get 13 more over the course of the rest of the season.
I'd be slightly worried because of, I think it was Ozil a couple of years ago, was before Christmas, he was two assists away from breaking the all-time record for assists, and he didn't get it in the rest of the season. So we could have 18 hat-tricks at Christmas time, and I still wouldn't be fully convinced that we'd get another one after that. So. It's hard to know. Probably can throw up anything.
A reminder, Manchester United against Arsenal. It's a big game on Sunday. Stephen Doyle and Brian Kerr on commentary duty for that one as well. Let's go through these fixtures. We've got 2 minutes to get through each one. We're starting with Wolves against Crystal Palace. Emmett, talk us through where the market is on this one.
Yeah, so we've Wolves at even money, the draw 2-1 and Palace at 16-5. It's really been a kind of a typical Crystal Palace season so far. I think they're producing awful statistics in terms of having the lowest possession in the league, lowest number of shots in the Premier League. But they have Roy Hodgson, which means a well-organised defence. And then they have Wilfred Zaha, obviously, playing superbly as more of a kind of centre-forward this season. And that's basically enough to keep them afloat, as per usual. And in terms of bet here, I think Zaha would be worth a look here to score at 7-2, as he scores a higher proportion of his goals away from home. and he should get a couple of chances on the break playing kind of closer to goal as he is.
Why are Crystal Palace as big as 3-1 and bigger in a game which is essentially a 50-50 game? These two teams have the exact same record up to this point.
We would still rate Wolves as a fair bit better than Palace over the season, just based on last season's performance and their kind of general statistics. And I think they have a slightly probably better squad and manager too.
I'm not buying it. I think this has like low score draw written all over it. And in fact, my bet of the week is less than 2.5 goals we scored in this one, 5-2 on. So you ain't getting rich on it, and don't put any significant amount of money on it. I would suggest it's also your one of your bets of the week, Enda.
Yeah. So I think Raúl Jiménez is a good shout on this. He's 3-1 on to be the first goal scorer in this game. He's scored every one of Wolves' goals this season in the Premier League bar one, and Wolves have been low scoring as well. So I fancy this to be a low scoring game. I think Wolves will win it by maybe 1-0, maybe 2-0. But if anybody's going to score, it'll be him. So kind of like what Emma was saying there, if Wolves can stop Wilfred Zaha, then Crystal Palace really need to stop Raúl Jiménez as well. They're the danger men in this game.
OK, let's move on to the next game. It's your game, Enda.
Man City against Sheffield United. Sheffield United at home in this one. And I think Man City, this is a game that Man City can really take advantage of, because Sheffield United have been in absolutely awful form. A little bit unlucky against Liverpool last week in the first half. Probably could have had a second penalty. Not really sure if the first penalty was a penalty in the first place, but you'll ignore that. Like the problem with Sheffield United last year was that they couldn't score goals, but the difference was they weren't conceding any. This year they are, and that's the key issue, because they've only scored 3. They've conceded 9 so far this season. They only conceded 39 last season in the whole season. So that's where they're really struggling. They're really missing O'Connell in the defence. And, you know, in that Liverpool game, I said they were unlucky, but also you're looking at things that Sheffield United would never have let happen in previous seasons. Like the Jordan Henderson cross to Mane for the first goal, for Liverpool's first goal, was something that you wouldn't see with Sheffield United. You wouldn't see Jordan Henderson free in that position, or at least he would have been closed down. And Mane certainly would have been free in the box. Same with Diego Jota in the second half for his goal. Like, two crosses beating Sheffield United is not something we've been used to, especially from last season. So they need to improve that. I think this is a perfect game for Man City, especially with Sergio Aguero back. And I don't know if you saw Pep Guardiola's comments about Aguero and how they couldn't replace him because they couldn't afford to replace him. So I think that UEFA ruling during the year, even though they came out clean at the end of it, I think it had a bigger impact on them that they like to point out, because they said the same with Laporte last season when he got injured. They couldn't afford to...
I don't believe it. And then stop wasting all the money on the fullbacks. It's your fault because you bought crap.
Well, is this going to be Pep Guardiola's last season?
You're parroting his lines there like you believe him.
No, but that's what, like, they're not actually, genuinely not actually replacing these players. So I wonder, is it that they can't afford to replace them, or they just don't want to because Pep Guardiola is going to be out the gap next season?
I don't know. I mean, like, this whole thing that it's all going to go tits up when he goes is nonsense. They're like multi-billionaires who aren't just in there for like a wet week with Pep Guardiola. Of course they have a management plan in place for what's coming next. What are the odds in this one, Emmett?
Yeah, so we've Sheffield United at 9-1, the draw at 9-2, and Man City quite short here at 1-4. It looks like City to me are undergoing somewhat of a kind of change of style of play to combat some of the defensive issues of last year. They're playing much more of a kind of controlled possession style and taking a lot less risks on the ball, trying to stop counterattacks. This is best illustrated during the week when Marseille had 0.04 of an expected goal during the week, so not a sniff basically. And might mean there might be some value in backing some of the low goal totals in some of their matches, as the markets possibly haven't caught up to the fact that this isn't the free-flowing City of old, and obviously they're short of options up front. So under 2.5 goals here at 6-4 would be worth a look, I think.
Yeah, I don't think they're anywhere near as good as they have been in recent seasons. Are you sure Aguero's back as well? He does that definitely, 100%?
Yeah, he was back last week.
Yeah, but he got injured again, didn't he?
Oh, well,
I'm pretty sure he's out.
Well, if he is, then I made a fool of myself.
In the middle of the West Ham game, so he's got a hamstring, and I would say no chance that they're going to go anywhere in that one. Okay, so what have we got next? Liverpool against West Ham, right?
Yes.
What are the odds for Liverpool against West Ham, Emmett?
Yeah, so we've got Liverpool 1-3, the draw 4-1, and West Ham 13-2. Yes, we've seen West Ham shorten up from 15-2 to 13-2 since the Fabinho injury during the week. I think as well, in the very short term, I think this could possibly affect Liverpool even more than the Van Dijk injury, especially with Joel Matt about, simply because there's a huge gap in quality between Fabinho and Reece Williams, who's set to start on Saturday. Williams was playing for Kidderminster in the National League North last year, and I think this West Ham team can certainly cause Liverpool problems at the break. This would have echoes to me of the the pre-Van Dijk Liverpool, where then he kind of needed to outscore teams to overcome a bad defence. And I could see Jurgen Klopp playing four forwards to overwhelm West Ham's defence. The only issue for West Ham, I would give West Ham a decent chance here to get a result, but one thing that would just hold me back would be Mikel Antonio out with a hamstring injury. Yeah. And that would be a huge concern. He's had that injury before.
I think that the price shortening for Fabinho, it should have lengthened the game once the confirmation came out that Antonio was out, because he has been in outrageous form. He's reaching an absolute peak in his career at this point and would have caused significant... just matched up really well against what Liverpool have. But I actually don't think that on a one-off basis, the Fabinho injury, they have enough nous and they have enough experience of playing without... a centre-back partnership that is their established centre-back partnership. You think back to the World Club Championships, and also they've got the goalkeeper back. So I'm not as concerned. Last week, correctly, we called on the show that West Ham would do something against City. I don't feel the same way this week. I think that Liverpool just have enough centre-back cover. West Ham, no mugs. I think this will be a close game. And I think Sheffield United actually played Liverpool quite well last week, but Liverpool did create a lot of chances. And I don't know, I think that he's managing his squad properly. So I think this is a routine enough victory for Liverpool, I would say, Andy.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, like West Ham were actually, they were quite good value for their draw against City last week. And if anything, they probably outplayed them in the second half. So again, Mikel Antonio out injured makes all the difference though in this game. He's, you can play him anywhere and he'll do a job for you. And he'll do a good job for you. Like he's no jack of all trades, master of none. He's very, very good up front.
Okay, the alarm bell has sounded. Aston Villa against Southampton is next. So this is third against seventh in the Premier League. And, you know, it's not the first week of the season. It is still third versus seventh. As the kids would say, WTF. Villa crashed a bit back to earth last week. Hasenhüttl is actually a brilliant manager when you put together the body of work that he has overseen. Particularly, was it a year and a week since they were beaten 9-0? And people expected that you can't survive that. But not only has he survived it, he has gone on... and continue to sell some of his best players while brilliantly recruiting. So these are the games when, from a Villa perspective, Dean Smith either makes the leap as a manager who is capable of being the perfect husband of the team that he has and getting good results out of them, or he is a fan in charge of a football team and not actually good enough to be doing it. So he's either limiting them or not. I feel like this one has draw written all over it. This is Sunday at noon. Emma, what's the score, or what's the story with the markets?
Yeah, so Aston Villa 7-5, the draw 5-2, and Southampton 17-10. And this is an interesting one, because I think Southampton would be quite similar to Leeds in terms of their style of play and their work rate, in terms of kind of maxing out the level of every player in the squad. That was something Villa seemed to struggle against, in terms of, I think their system just didn't look tight enough to kind of stop Leeds as runners, and the likes of Rodrigo and Click were just getting so much space in midfield. So I'd expect probably kind of a much tighter Villa approach here, and maybe even potentially get Jack Grealish off the wing, but obviously he has been playing well there. I think it's maybe a pretty tight game here, with Villa kind of reacting to the Leeds result.
Yeah, so not huge excitement in that one. So next, Newcastle against Everton.
Newcastle is against Everton, Jair. So I said last week that Southampton could be the thorn in Everton's shoe, and they proved to be that. I thought it would have been a draw, but Everton are like, they're really struggling now. This is what we're talking about. When you're playing for a top four side and playing to try and get into the top four, you need that depth in squad. Everton are just that, probably one season away from building on the squad they currently have. Richarlison's out, suspended, really missed him last week. Seamus Coleman, they're really seeing that he's a key player for them at right back, out injured. And now this week again, they're missing Luka Dean and potentially James Rodriguez again.
He's still out recovered.
It's a problem with his nether regions. It's one of the weirder injuries that you're likely to come about. It was called a muscle strain by Carlo Ancelotti last week. It's not so much a muscle strain as it is another issue. So
give us some details there. What's wrong with him?
I don't actually know what's wrong with him, Jerry. I'm not a physician, and I just don't. I'm very uncomfortable going into the actual
inner details of this.
I said nether regions. That pretty much sums it up. He got a knock in his testicles, and he may not be fit for this game. He played last week, so I don't know if he's going to be fit or not. But he's a key player for them, and he's starting to really see that the Premier League is not for You're going to pick up these knocks here and there, and you're going to have to play on with them. So I think this is going to be a difficult enough one for Everton again. Newcastle again were quite good last week. Darlow and Nat has been in flying form. Most saves for any Premier League or any keeper in the top five leagues in England or in Europe at the minute. So he's in flying form. So he might be able to keep them out. And if Newcastle can stay strong for the first 60 minutes of this, I'd say they can get in a draw, I'd say.
Yeah, it's not going to be hugely exciting. Newcastle are a very, very dull team to watch at the moment. So if you can avoid this and keep up to date with it on off the ball, then that's the thing to do. Manchester United against Arsenal, 4:30 kickoff. This is a proper big game, and what's going to happen?
100 games of Solskjaer. Did you know that? That's 100. It's his 100th game in charge of United, and that time has flown. So, you know, I wanted to talk about what's changed under Solskjaer. So, obviously, youth has come to the forefront. The style of game has changed. The mood of the changing room has changed a lot, and a lot of the dead weight is gone. But is anything different under Solskjaer now? Like, do you feel that the club has progressed any closer to a title?
Is anything different under Solskjaer?
There's loads different, but are they down the road towards a title?
Would you rather have the team that Solskjaer has now building the way they are, or would you rather have the team that Mourinho had that was a Europa League team? I'd rather have a Solskjaer team.
Look, I think there's been vast improvements under Solskjaer, to be honest, and I think that the game against RB Leipzig, game against PSG the week before, and multiple top six games last season, Solskjaer has proven that he can put out a team to win these games, and they're probably suited better to playing these type of games as well against the better opposition that do attack them. And I do think that's going to be the same again against an Arsenal side who are in a bit of a mixed form, but if you see their game plan starting to take shape under Arteta a little bit, the fullbacks are getting forward a lot with Bellerin and Tierney. And that's exactly where United can do the damage to them as well, down the wings. If they can get on the counter-attack and the defence can hold solid like they have been in the last couple of games, then this could be a really big win for Solskjaer. Like this could set them on their way to another
really big, important, or really big, they're going to hammer Arsenal. What are you saying?
No, important. I think if they win against Arsenal this weekend, then United could go unbeaten until Christmas.
Emma, what does the money say?
Yeah, so Man United evens, the draw 5-2, and our Arsenal 5-2. Yeah, I wouldn't put anyone off backing United here. I think we've seen four fairly decent from them back to back, and I don't think Arsenal are in a great place here. I think it appears that one of Callum Chambers or Mustafi will be starting at centre half. With David Luiz out, I think United can cause some serious problems with their pace and skill in the forward line. I don't think Arsenal really have the attack to hurt United in the counter attack either. Alex Lacazette looks a shadow of the player he was. I think Willian, again, is short of pace going towards the end of his career. And the spend of 70 million they spent on Nicolas Pepe just looks like a really terrible signing. Even though he scored a nice goal last night, his general performance was quite poor. I think Arteta looked short of options up front, and United just, to me, look kind of a level above Arsenal here a little bit.
Awesome bit of skill against Dundalk last night. So you don't expect Arsenal to score?
I think if they do, it'll be, I think I can see being kind of a 2-1, 3-1 type of game. You can never be too confident with United keeping a clean sheet, but I can't see them really punishing United's kind of areas of weakness.
Okay, Spurs against Brighton is next, with Enda's crazy thought that Brighton might get 10 shots on target.
Yeah, they might do, but they're not going to score. And to be honest, I don't rate Brighton at all. I don't know if you watched the West Brom game against Brighton.
I did not.
Yeah, well,
I did not.
For my punishment, I sat down. Oh, well, you know, I managed to find it somehow on my special TV, Jerry. I won't go into detail on that. But I sat down and watched it, and
they're coming for you, Endicall.
Like, Brighton were so good in the first half, but they have nothing to penetrate the defence. And then the second half, they fell apart. So I think they're going to do the same again this week. Jose Mourinho had a pretty noticeable dig at Dele Alli after their 1-0 thrashing against Antwerp in the week.
It was at everybody, though. Was it not at Bale as well?
It kind of was.
What did he say?
But
tell
he also said
the
specific line that kind of stood out to me was when he said, you all asked me why I'm not playing certain players. Well, I think that tonight answers that question, so don't ask me again for another couple of weeks. So that has been a
Dele Alli started. Bale started.
But the theme has been journalists asking why Dele Alli isn't in the team and speculating why Dele Alli isn't in the team.
So game's gone.
Gone. So his head's gone, and he's not going to be playing. But I do think Brighton are the perfect team for Tottenham to beat pretty handily and pretty easily because they do attack and Tottenham are really good in the counter-attack. So I think this could be a bit of a thrashing for Tottenham.
Emmett, Spurs odds-on favourite here?
Yeah, so Spurs 4-7, the draw 3-1, and Brighton 9-2. Yeah, I was interested last night. I do think the Mourinho strategy of kind of laying into the players publicly as years have gone on has really come back to hurt them. I don't know whether it's the modern player a little bit more sensitive, but I do think I think that strategy has let him down since seeing him lose dressing rooms at United and Chelsea. So I'm interested to see how things progress. I think Tottenham aren't as good as their start of the season has suggested, but I clearly would expect them to beat Brighton here, who, as Enda said, just play an excellent style of play and are well managed, just don't quite have the talent up front.
Yeah, okay. And I thought it was interesting that the fullbacks last night weren't the fullbacks from last weekend, so it looks like a couple of years ago, Pochettino used to do this, where he would change his fullbacks game after game after game after game because he appreciates they're all going to have to run between 10 and 12 kilometres. But it was good, I think, that Doherty didn't play last night, although Reguilón did. So I still would like to see Reguilón and Doherty established as the first choice fullbacks for the bigger games. Anyway, look, we can talk about that again because Spurs are going nowhere. We're going to be talking about them every week. They're going to be in top four contention and in title contention. Fulham against West Brom. Wow. What a fixture. They drew 1-1 twice last season. They will do the same here. Let's move on. You can tell us what the odds are, but I don't really want to talk about Fulham West Brom. What's the crack?
Yeah, so Fulham 7-5, the draw 11-5, 15-8. All I'll say is, yeah, I would expect that it was a real chance for Fulham last week against Palace, and they completely fluffed their lines, and it was a complete non-performance. So I think hard to have enthusiasm about them here.
It is. The only thing is, they're going to have to win a game at some point, right? Like, we just know that there's very few. What's the latest that the worst team in the Premier League has ever won its first game? I don't know. It's
probably Crystal Palace went 8 games without scoring a goal under. The Dutch coach.
Frank de Boer.
Frank de Boer, yeah. I think it was 8 games they went without even scoring. So, I mean, they're definitely not worse than that team. But one thing about this year, how smart is that Sky supercomputer that it just manages to put the most boring game on a Monday night at 5 o'clock when nobody's going to be watching?
Pretty smart.
It's three weeks in a row now West Brom have been there. It's so like, that's a personal dig at them, to be honest.
Yeah, well, it's like the machine learning that ends up killing the world in Terminator is clever enough to do that. I mean,
well, what, 15 years since the iPhone came out, and now look at us here. We can predict when the most boring game is going to be.
Okay, Leeds against Leicester City.
Did you watch Leeds against Aston Villa?
I mean, look, Leeds are pretty good, right?
That second half performance was probably the best second half performance from any side this year or in the last couple of years.
Hang on. Villa stuck 5 past Liverpool.
Villa were excellent in that first half, and then Leeds just tore them to shreds in the second half, whatever was said at halftime. But again, this is a game that you're looking at and you're like, could be a lot of goals in this, and it ends in a scoreless draw, and it's quite tight. But Timothy Castagne is out injured for Leicester this weekend, and so is Johnny Evans. So if there's a week where Leeds could do damage, and if they're on form like they were last week, then they should score in this game. But again, as much as Brendan Rodgers likes to say that he has developed Leicester City's game plan, it's pretty much just a counter-attacking game plan as well. So if Leeds attack Leicester like they did Aston Villa, then Leicester have more on the attack than Aston Villa do in terms of counter-attacking. And Jamie Vardy, it's just phenomenal. How many years can he do this? Like, how many years can he be at the top of his
game? If they turn him into
a
super sub, maybe he could eke out another 3 or 4 years in his career like this. Because if he's only playing half an hour.
Mm. But he's so dangerous on the counter-attack, so dangerous full stop. So I think the likelihood of this is a draw, but definitely a score draw. And I'm awaiting the nil-all draw because I'm saying that. That's my thoughts on that, Jer.
Emmett?
Yes, I think this is a pretty interesting game. I would have been worried for Leeds against Villa and their kind of immediate future with Calvin Phillips being out. He's such a huge player for their system, and he puts a lot of the fires when they commit so many players forward in attack. And against Villa, his replacement, Pascal Strike, had to be taken off after 20 minutes because he looked like he was going to get a red card. And the guy they brought on from, I think, Shackleton, played quite well, and the system worked quite well after that. I think I can't see anything but a kind of entertaining game here, especially with kind of Leicester's defensive absences. I think over 3.5 goals, 15-8, worth a look. And I think Leicester are even doing well to be treading water at this stage, considering the absences of Soyuncu, Ndidi and Ricardo Pereira. If they can just kind of hold their position until Christmas, I think after Christmas we could see them push for top six, top four.
Yeah, I wouldn't be back in a draw in this, to be honest, Enda, because there's a likelihood of like a slew of late goals and chances and it being a bit madcap at the end. Like, that's a bit of chaos that it's coming into it. But back in over a total number of goals, at least you get to enjoy it. Just want to say thanks for the free fiver last week. I still got a nil draw in the game between Chelsea and Manchester United, and that was quids in. It was a 14-1 winner.
Lovely. I did not.
What did you bet on?
I put both teams to score, United to win, which I thought was quite good odds at the time, but no, I don't.
Okay, so we were supposed to put up our polls that we've been getting you all to vote on Instagram for the various matches. We will do that next week, I promise you. Don't worry. So keep voting on those, because we've had huge interaction with them. And it's funny how frequently the voting public disagrees with what the odds on the match are going to be. And that's essentially why we have markets being made on all these games out there. So your bet for the week, just to recap, Friday night football, Raul Jimenez, first goal scorer, 3-1. You're saying that there aren't going to be many goals.
Yeah, I have a weekend accumulator as well. That's Wolves to win, United draw with Arsenal, and Fulham West Ham draw, which comes in at 21-1. So it's pretty okay. I might stick 2 euro on that, potentially.
Emmett, is there a pattern to successful accumulators that you want to share with us?
not a massive amount. I think probably like just that. It's hard to do if you have the time. The best thing you can do is try to price up, get the games every week yourself, and just look at the odds. If you think a team's bigger odds than it should be, and back that over a period of time. I think that's try to look for value. I think that is the way the most kind of professional gamblers would do it. And even for like the casual punter, if you take 10 minutes to look at it, like that's over long term, that's your best chance of seeing value. If you pick me one or two or three teams a week, you think you're slightly bigger odds than they should be, and over the season you might be up a small bit of money.
Yeah, so that's why like I'm not going to bet on Crystal Palace to beat Wolves tonight. But I do think that in a game between two sides, which are very evenly matched, and I know you're talking about last season's form feeding into your ratings, like on current form and in the current format where home advantage doesn't seem to matter at all at the moment, it seems like home advantage has been completely shorn, then one team is evens and one team is 3-1. That seems to me like there's the bit where you can make the argument that there's value. Are you guys seeing any change in home teams and home favourites and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, it's actually funny you mentioned that. We're in the office, we've been kind of trying to look at it over the past, since the post-COVID break, what has been the biggest change in terms of home advantage, how much it's worth. We reckon it's about half as much as it used to be worth, in terms of obviously you're sleeping in the same bed, same pitch, same dressing room, etc. But removing of fans, we reckon is worth half of the home advantage. I think the kind of studies on home advantage in the past have indicated that the biggest reason for home advantage is the kind of the fans' influence on the referee, and obviously that's been taken away. So I think we've definitely seen home advantage take a fairly big hit since the fans have been removed.
Yeah, that would make sense. That seems to be the commonality between all sports so far that we've seen. Okay, reminder, you can get involved with the votes every Thursday on Instagram. You can follow us at Off the Ball on Twitter, and votes obviously only count up until 10 a.m. on Friday morning. We'd love to hear from you by WhatsApp. If you've got tips for us, then, or if you've got questions for us as well that you want to ask any of our pointy-headed odds compilers from Paddy Power, we'll put them to the lads every week for you, 0879 180 180. But it's Paddy Power Half Hour every Friday afternoon at 1:30, and we see that out on all of our social channels. We'll see you next Friday at 1:30 for more winning bets, hopefully. Take care. Happy Halloween.
The Paddy Power Half Hour on OT Sports. Minimal contact in stadiums. That shouldn't stop the usual suspects from going down. Gamble responsibly. GamblingCare.ie. That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.